We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm up your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hello, CMOS Grillies. Welcome back to the podcast. It is Emma. I'm with Kate, obviously. I'm very hungry and tired, which is a lethal combination for me. So I hope Kate is doing a little bit better over in Manhattan. I'm potting from Brooklyn. How are you doing?
Doing good. Yeah, I just nibbled on some snacks before this pod. I had a blessed sumo orange from our PR box. I had a Yasso bar. I had some carrots with a hummus that I've recently rediscovered. It's the Hope Curry Thai Curry Hummus. Very good, very flavorful. I feel like a lot of hummuses are just pretty bland. And realistically, I could make my own hummus, but I feel like I've been not in my apartment much, not inspired to cook. I might move this upcoming year. I just have not been inspired by my kitchen. And I realize a lot of the reason I eat like a hag is because one, I'm a hag, but two, I just don't like my kitchen. So that's a typical New York apartment thing, but I'm doing good. I'm coming off the, I'm not gonna even say it was an injury, but weird nagging pain in my body moment that I was having. I'm training for a marathon, was kind of hitting my peak mileage, and just weird things started to come up in my calf and my knee and my IT band and then my Achilles and my shin. And so my physical therapist was out on paternity leave, but luckily I saw him today. And so I'm coming back at it with running once again. And it's definitely been frustrating to feel like I'm losing fitness, especially it feels like it's kind of random why this is happening. And I know a lot of the CMOS girlies have injuries, have messaged me about marathon training and just like what to do when stuff comes up. And obviously the first answer is rest. And none of us probably want to do that because you're worried about losing fitness and stuff. But I've sort of like forced myself to reframe this perspective like many times that it can kind of be fun to dig yourself out of a hole. Like I went to Solid Core like 2 weeks ago when I couldn't really run because I was like, let's do something that's low impact, whatever. And I've taken over 100 Solid Core classes somehow. I could not do more than one rep for like some of the exercises. And I didn't feel embarrassment. I didn't feel shame, but I was just like, wow, I haven't done this workout in 6 months. Like clearly I don't know how to do it anymore. And I'm kind of at the point with running where like, it's not fun to lose fitness, but it is kind of fun to see yourself gain it back. And so if you're at a point with like you're experiencing an injury or you feel like you've just fallen off, we shall say, don't worry because you can get back on that grind and you can rebuild yourself. And like my injury last year, I became a better runner after my injury. So just leaving that for the CMOS girlies for some hope and optimism. If you're down bad, it's definitely tough to gain fitness and like have that motivation when you feel like you just have fallen off the map, but I have faith in you girlies. And I believe that you can always slay if you want to slay.
It is always fun to kind of rebuild your strength or endurance, whatever it may be. I've been actually taking lifting a little bit more seriously again. And I wouldn't really say that I've noticed that I've like gained muscle, but I can definitely tell that like I've regained a lot of my strength back, which is like exciting to see and be able to like progress in weight. So yeah, it is kind of like motivating. And I feel like too, if you do hit a plateau, sometimes it's nice just to like obviously you're not like hitting a plateau right now, but like just in generally like speaking, it's nice if you do hit a plateau just to like take a month or two off and get back at it. And like who knows, like maybe that rest ended up being like what exactly your body needed to kind of then progress to the next level. I don't have anything too insightful on my end for intros. I just have some general favorites that I figured I would share with the girlies, just because I sometimes forget that I do have minor influence and people are probably curious about products that I use, et cetera. One is not a product, one is a restaurant recommendation. I went to this restaurant called Nura in Greenpoint. It's a new American restaurant, which I'm like, I need a formal definition of what new American means because that's like so vague. But it's like Indian and Mediterranean inspired. I probably had the best naan of my life there, but they have a Japanese sweet potato dish. And I know all the seamless girlies love a Japanese sweet potato. And it was like so phenomenal. It like came with this like very creamy and tangy yogurt sauce and then this type of like chopped mixed salad thing on top. I'm not describing this and doing it justice by any means, but anyway, it was just like a really phenomenal space, just like very like roomy and airy. And I was like, I kind of understand why people enjoy testing and trying out new restaurants. My other few favorites are Cezanne has been a very lovely brand in my life recently. And I've been really, really into their t-shirts, and they have a t-shirt called Conrad, I believe. I'm kind of in the camp where it's actually sort of worth like spending decent money on a t-shirt. Like I love Brandy Melville for like t-shirts to sleep in, to hang out in, you know, whatnot. But I do feel like they stretch out so quickly. And when you have like a nice t-shirt, it just like does make your outfit look so much better. And anyway, they're like not that expensive just because I feel like, you know, quote unquote nicer t-shirts can definitely run like $100, $200 and it's like, babes, what for what? These are definitely like under $100. And I have them in a few colors and they've just been like a staple in my outfits recently. That's definitely been like my uniform. And then my last product is Herborian, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's a Korean skincare brand that my friend works for. So she sent me a few of their products, but they have this like red color corrector cream, very similar to the Dr. Jart's one. But I love the consistency. I feel like the Dr. Jart's is like a little too thick in terms of the texture and the consistency, but this is like so liquidy. It almost feels like a tinted moisturizer, but it obviously is like green and supposed to help correct with any like red color or red coloring that you might experience like with your complexion. And I like haven't even been wearing blush or anything. I know Kate was talking about just wearing that and kind of calling it a day in terms of like your makeup when putting that on. But it's been like nice to kind of like even out my complexion, but not feel like I'm like putting a shit ton of blush and so many products on my face for when I want something that's like a little bit more lightweight.
I love that. Yeah, I've been having some makeup wins recently. I've like feel like I have mastered my essential look and like how to have it like an everyday look versus how to have it as like a going out look. I had like this fancy event to attend on Saturday or on Friday, and so I wanted to do my makeup like properly. And so I did the Dr. Jart cream, like that's what I have, and I did a full face of foundation and everything. But I feel like there's this pressure when you are like, oh, I have to go to an event that like you have to have eyeshadow, like mascara, lipstick, whatever. And I just did kind of my usual look, but added a few extra flares. And I feel like I felt so much more confident than if I were to have like heavy eye makeup on. I've been loving, which is such a vintage product, when Glossier had the play line. I think it's called Nightshine or something. It's like this bronzer that somehow I've had in my like makeup rotation for probably years. And I wish they would fucking bring it back, but it's like a liquid bronzer. And I've been applying that. Also, well, Emma and I should just talk about this off pod, but the Outdoor Voices news was crazy to me. I feel like the girlies are probably thinking about that as well, that they did like some crazy like 50% off sale on everything over the weekends. And they like didn't give their employees like any notice and just like they're kind of going down. Which feels like the true end of an era. Like Outdoor Voices, I worked there retail 2018 to 2019 for anyone who doesn't know. And so, yeah, it just like felt like such a moment in the culture. And it's kind of crazy that the stores are closing. But my last thought is a book recommendation. And this book is about productivity culture. So I feel like everyone can probably relate to it in some aspect, whether you're a student, you have a job, you work freelance like me. It talks about how office culture has made us all feel like we have to be busy all the time and how that doesn't actually optimize for good results. Like a lot of us are just doing like quality over quantity when it comes to work, and a lot of us don't have like deep work. And so the book talks about how like the way that the reason that we used to be so tied up to productivity is when we used to have like an economy that was based on like making bread loaves. And so it would make sense to like calculate, you know, how many bread loaves you'd produce in an hour. But when it comes to knowledge work, which is what most of us do, like if you send 100 emails in an hour versus one, that doesn't mean you're a better worker. I just found the book to be really fascinating. I feel like it could apply to a lot of people that feel that pressure to be productive. I feel like a lot of CMOS girlies especially feel that like kind of tendency to be super organized on top of it, do a million things. And it's really forced me to consider why I feel better when I am go, go, go all the time versus like, am I actually having a deep sense of meaning with my work, or am I just happy that I'm getting random stupid tasks done? So I highly recommend that to the girlies. And yeah, restaurant rec for me that I have is Bernie's in Greenpoint. I haven't been able to go just because it's kind of hectic. They don't take reservations. But I finally made it over to Bernie's. I spilled an entire Diet Coke of myself before the meal started, but it was phenomenal. Got the ribs and split a burger with someone, and it was a phenomenal meal. So if you're in Brooklyn, go check it out. But this week's pod is going to be some random topics that you guys have asked us over, the past 6 months or so. Emma and I have a list of all the things that you girlies want to hear about. So we're going to talk about gluten-free. We're going to talk about adaptogens, what organic means, micronutrients. So I'm going to call Emma back, and then we'll get into this thing.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Our next partner is a product that Emma and I take every single day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted to find a greens powder that actually blended together. The taste is hands down the best greens powder I've been able to find. It even has a mild tropical taste, and you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, you name it.
For me, I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a supplement that actually tastes great. I've always known that taking a greens powder is a great addition to one's wellness routine, but I could just never get past the unpleasant taste. This completely changed once I started taking Athletic Greens. It tastes so good that I actually look forward to drinking it every morning, something I never knew was possible. Plus, Athletic Greens contains dairy-free probiotics. And let me tell you, my digestion has never been better.
Another thing that Emma and I love is that it's the one thing with the best things. Athletic Greens uses the best of best products based on the latest science with constant product iterations and third-party testing.
It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is go visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hi, CMOS girlies. We are so excited to announce today's podcast sponsor, Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well.
Are you tired of cooking the same slop? Well, spice it up with the premier variety offered by Green Chef. You can embark on a delicious culinary adventure this year with Green Chef's diverse menu with 80 plus options. Green Chef even has tons of lifestyle preferences like keto, vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free, you name it.
Supporting your gut health can be challenging, but Green Chef makes it really easy and fun because their meals are nutrient-dense, science-backed, gut and brain health recipes, which are all developed in partnership with registered dietitians that can help improve digestion, reduce bloat, and also boost energy and immunity.
If you girlies are looking to stock up your pantry on different functional snacks and clean beverages, you know, the ones that support your gut and brain health this January, lucky for you, Green Chef has different green bundles, which are a curated selection of unique handpicked goods that support your overall wellness goals. Emma and I love using Green Chef to learn how to cook new dishes, to spice up our pantry with new goodies and snacks, and have much less worry about grocery shopping.
So if you're interested in trying out Green Chef, go to greenchef.com/60CMOS and use code 60CMOS to get 60% off plus 20% off your next 2 months.
Now back to the show.
CMOS girlies, we're going to get into the episode. It's definitely a hodgepodge of an episode, but these are topics that you submitted. So let's get into it. We're going to start off by talking about micronutrients, which I remember we talked about probably many, many, many episodes ago, kind of talking about the differences between micronutrients and macronutrients. Macronutrients certainly get all of the light, and that is largely because they're required in much larger amounts compared to micronutrients. And that's really the main difference between the two groups. Micronutrients are not going to be required for energy, but rather for different bodily systems and processes such as metabolism. So, like, our body really needs macronutrients to really like fuel itself and to like utilize for energy, while micronutrients are a little bit more underlooked and are required for like smaller systems that many of us probably don't think about on a day-to-day basis. Micronutrients are kind of divided into two different types of groups. So you got your vitamins. This will include your water soluble and fat soluble. And then you have your minerals, which include your macro minerals and your micro or trace minerals. And like it's fairly rare for us to really experience any true deficiencies in micronutrients, especially in a developed country where we're all probably eating, adequate amount of food compared to countries that maybe do experience some type of famine. However, it is possible to experience inadequacies of certain micronutrients, and this can lead to things like weak immunity, fatigue, cognitive issues, et cetera. And this is largely due to, people who are perhaps eating a more heavily processed diet, are severely under eating, such as people who are experiencing eating disorders, or really just anyone that isn't eating like sufficient amounts of fruits and vegetables. So you could be eating quote unquote healthy, but if you're eating a lot of those like diet foods, or perhaps just like stuff that doesn't really include much, fruits and vegetables, like I said, you could potentially be at risk for any type of low levels of, I'm thinking like magnesium or other type of vitamins. But it's really hard to pinpoint and know if you are truly deficient, especially early on, unless you're doing routine blood work, which again is like very expensive, requires a lot of time and energy on us as individuals. So like for the most part, a lot of us are walking around probably having no idea if we are truly experiencing any deficiencies, unless like it's something that you can actually experience externally. But really like the main point that I wanted to touch on is like why our food today lacks micronutrients. Just because I think this is like a very important topic for all of us to be like aware of and to hopefully utilize this as like knowledge for us to like, make decisions in terms of when we do decide to go out and buy groceries for ourselves. And of course, there's only so much that you can do on an individual scale. But really the main reason is due to soil depletion and modern agricultural farming practices. And these include things such as like fertilizer, which, utilizing excessive amounts of fertilizer does destroy biodiversity in the soil. Monoculture, which is growing a single crop year over year, which really depletes the soil of nutrients. The usage of pesticides. And obviously, pesticides can be beneficial in terms of increasing the yield by keeping weeds or harmful organisms like under control. But the overuse of it can kill the good microbes in the soil. And also can make their way into local water systems. And really, just like all of these practices in general deplete the soil of nutrients where our food is growing. And that's obviously how our food obtains its nutrients. So if you have poor soil health, you're not going to have a very like healthy and like very vibrant fruit and vegetable that contains high levels of these small micronutrients. And also too, like the work to breed new varieties of crops is primarily done to increase yields and like improve pest resistance, et cetera. And these have resulted in larger crops that grow more quickly, but their ability to also uptake nutrients is not kept up also. And since, our vegetables are getting much bigger and bigger, they're just starting to have less and less of these nutrients. And there's been a few studies that's really looked at the levels of micronutrients today compared to, maybe 50 years ago. There was a study from 2017 that cited that nitrogen stores, which is a micronutrient, have decreased by 42%, sulfur by 33%, phosphorus by 27%. And why this matters, like plants need a lot of these key nutrients to grow optimally and to photosynthesize and protein synthesis. So like not only do like micronutrients are needed for bodily systems within our own bodies, but like also our plants need these to, properly grow in order for us to actually be able to eat them. There's another study done by the University of Texas at Austin's Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry, and they examined like 43 different garden crops, and they compared the nutritional profile in 1950 to 1999, and they saw around like a 6 to 38% drop in, certain micronutrients such as vitamin C, iron, phosphorus, and calcium, and the magnesium also has dropped nearly 25%. And other trace minerals such as zinc and manganese have also dropped. And so, like, what does this mean for us? Like, I think it can be really frustrating when you're like trying to eat healthy, especially when you're on a budget and you think you're doing all the right things, but like you may not even actually be obtaining any of those micronutrients, or you may not even be eating as much like vitamin C or magnesium as you would think. And so, when our doctors are like, oh, you're low in this, like your first thought is like, okay, I'm gonna like either supplement or I'm gonna like, start eating foods that have a lot of like, that are high in zinc. And then it's like if 5 months later you are still kind of at like the same baseline as you were when you initially had this conversation with your doctor, it can just be frustrating realizing that like, oh, maybe it's just because like the food that I'm eating is not as nutritious as it was 50 years ago. And so like my recommendations for all of us is like, obviously buy organic when possible. And I'm going to talk about organic versus non-organic. And of course, like it's a huge privilege to be able to afford organic food and be able to pay for it because it is at such a premium price. I definitely suggest, taking a multivitamin, taking and supplementing with magnesium or really just any minerals that that you're like very much definitely lacking in. All of us are definitely low in magnesium, and other lifestyle factors can cause the depletion of magnesium. So that's like one that Kate and I are always talking about is like our holy grail supplement. And yeah, like I said, it's just like a shame that we aren't guaranteed adequate nutrition. And we're told to eat like X amount of servings of fruits and veggies a day, but I recommend trying to like see how many different types of fruit and vegetables you can eat throughout the week. So instead of like being like, okay, I'm gonna eat just like, 4 cups of blueberries and call that my servings, like maybe try buying like a new frozen bag of fruit, whether that's like frozen cherries, frozen mango. That way you're just A, diversifying your intake, which we know is like great for gut health, but then also too, you're gonna be getting different types of nutrients from different types of foods. And also too, like chronically dieting too is just going to leave you at lower levels of deficiencies. So like anyone who is experiencing an eating disorder, or like someone who maybe just like routinely is just eating a lot of vegetables, like yeah, that's great that you're eating a lot of vegetables, but if you're not eating enough calories, you're also putting yourself at risk for being, depleting and or being low in other types of micronutrients. So I think that's just like something else to take in mind.
Yeah, all good points, because I do feel like there is a lot of kind of freaking out about being perfect, which I do feel like a lot of these topics we're talking about today kind of get into, like some of the orthorexia or just quote like eating clean territory. My topic is about gluten free. So I think a lot of you guys asked just kind of about like who should go gluten free, like why is there this rise in celiac disease or like people that are opting into gluten free diets? And I think it's a really interesting topic in the wellness space that I often think about. Like, why do we have this increase? Because we've done episodes on milk and dairy and grains and gluten like entirely. And so if you go back to those episodes, like as Emma's mentioned, our food system has changed so much with climate change and the world that we're in now being just like more polluted and how that affects the crops. And so that's some reason why more of us are more sensitive to food. And the overall purpose of like why gluten-free diets, I guess, have started. Have been a cure to treat celiac disease. And if you don't know what celiac disease is, that people with celiac disease have an immune reaction that's triggered by eating gluten. And gluten is a protein that's going to be found in different grains. So wheat, barley, and rye are the main categories. And it's going to be common in like everything you think of as having gluten, which could be bread, pasta, pizza, cereal. And the interesting thing is that gluten doesn't have any essential nutrients. So when we talk about micronutrients and vitamins, like gluten isn't an essential thing that you need, though it is in a lot of foods that could have essential vitamins and minerals and stuff. But people with celiac disease, they tend to develop this inflammation and damage to their intestinal tracts and different parts of the body when they do eat gluten. Common symptoms include like IBS, fatigue-like symptoms, and current estimates we have now suggest that about 1% of the population have this condition. And so if you do have celiac disease, gluten-free diet would be essential to eliminate this inflammation and the symptoms you're having. Obviously, this would have to be done with a healthcare provider and really testing and like really taking this as an experiment to see what works for you, what doesn't. It's a very lengthy, like arduous process, and I'm not disincentivizing people from like testing it out and being curious, but if you have any sort of issues with gluten, like it can be really challenging. I have some friends that even if food is put on a pan or something that was previously using gluten, and then it's like the smallest amount of cross-contamination can like lead them to go to the hospital for it. So it is a very severe disease. And so estimates show, though, that, like I just mentioned, 1% of the population has celiac disease, but about 20 to 30% of people in the United States are gluten-free. So that's a huge like discrepancy between the amount of people that are actually confirmed, I have celiac disease, need to go gluten-free, and a lot of people are choosing to opt into a gluten-free lifestyle, which I think is interesting because there's also something called gluten sensitive. So this is people who test negative for celiac disease, but when they eat food that has gluten, they still kind of get those symptoms like abdominal pain, diarrhea, cramping, bloating, etc. And I think it's interesting because some people definitely buy gluten-free products because of this association with health. Like, there's not gluten in it. It has to be healthy for me. And a 2013 study showed that about 65% of American adults think that gluten-free foods are healthier than their counterparts. And 27% of people chose gluten-free products in order to aid in this weight loss. And I think this ties to just like fear-mongering about carbs that we've had for decades in the US, that carbs are going to make you fat. Carbs are so bad for you. They're going to give you all these different diseases. And I think people associate gluten like pretty closely with those opinions. So it tracks and it makes sense that a lot of people would just say, I'm going to go get gluten-free this because it's healthier for me. And are there any reasons to go gluten-free if you do not have celiac disease? I think this is an interesting question. I don't have a definitive yes or no on this because I'm definitely, keen to have some Simple Mills stuff in my pantry, which is gluten-free, but then at the same time, I also eat gluten. And I think some people go gluten-free because there is this connection to inflammation. So since gluten can trigger inflammation in people with celiac disease, I think other people might think, if I avoid it, even if I don't have the extent of celiac disease, but maybe there's harmful inflammation going on in like small doses if I go ahead and eat gluten. But there's actually no evidence supporting this, that people without celiac disease get any sort of inflammation from specifically eating gluten. And I also think another caveat is like, what food are you eating with gluten in it, right? If you're eating, let's say, pizza that has cheese, oils, this, and this is not me demonizing food. That's just going to say that pizza is going to absorb in your body very differently than bread with nothing else on it. Where, like, the bread just with the gluten is much more of a singular mono meal product than like a pizza that has gluten and dairy and oil and trans fat, saturated fat, whatever. So I do think that when people go, I'm not going to eat gluten at all, like really investigate your reasons behind that, because there are a lot of downsides to just kind of willy-nilly going gluten-free if you don't have a serious condition. Even though people think that gluten-free diets are more nutritious and contain more minerals and vitamins, oftentimes the opposite can be true when you go down that path, because gluten-free foods are commonly less fortified with things like folic acid, with iron, and other nutrients that regular foods that have gluten have in them. Gluten-free foods tend to have less fiber. They tend to have more sugar and fat. And the reason they have less fiber is because IBS is a common symptom of those with celiac disease. And people have found that those who tend to follow a gluten-free lifestyle have followed a trend towards things like obesity and weight gain. Now, that is not like a definitive statement. That is just in certain like case studies of people that have gone gluten-free. But there was a study that showed that many newly diagnosed patients with celiac disease did have deficiencies in things like calcium, vitamin D, and iron. And that's something that only can really be tested by your healthcare provider. So, like, let's say you are going gluten-free, you've been confirmed you have celiac disease, but you're working with a healthcare provider. They're going to be aware of that. They're going to be aware that you're not eating gluten anymore and you're going to be lacking certain nutrients. So you could supplement for them, you could change up your diet in other ways. But if you just decide to cut out gluten, I think there's some unintended consequences that people might not think of. Like, that's something that I didn't even consider. Like, oh yeah, gluten-free foods are going to have like different ingredients because people with celiac disease are going to be inflamed by fiber and things like that. And also another statement is like, gluten-free foods tend to be more expensive than conventional foods. There's going to be a markup on them just because there's less demand for them. It takes more science to create them and use more expensive ingredients in the product. And it reminds me of like organic foods that people are often willing to pay for much higher prices for foods they think are healthier. But oftentimes, like as I said, it's hard to know if these things are actually going to be healthier for you because the body's a system. It's going to have a lot of ingredients in it. So if you're just opting out of gluten because you think it's healthier for you, I would suggest probably not doing it. And I've also heard just anecdotally from friends that are gluten-free, like one time I was hanging out with a friend and we both got like gluten-free pastries or something. And she made a comment of like, Kate, as long as you don't have issues when you eat gluten, like please keep eating gluten as much as you can because Gluten is kind of like dairy and it's kind of like meat. When you stop eating it, your body stops being able to digest and process it. So I think over time, if you are just naturally eating less and less gluten and opting for gluten-free items, like you could be giving yourself a sensitivity to a degree. So just eat the gluten. You know, if you are having issues, go see a healthcare provider because they're going to be able to like get you down the right path, give you testing, and kind of keep you out of that like WebMD rabbit hole with it.
Yeah, the gluten-free craze is something I feel like that was almost a little bit before our time. Like I've never been around like big groups of people or like had friends that were like, I'm gluten-free for XYZ, but my mom and my brother have pretty bad eczema and they've always have like wanted to figure out the root cause of it. So they've been trying out this like holistic protocol with a bunch of doctors. And one of the protocols is actually for them to not eat gluten because eczema can actually be tied to maybe gut sensitivity. So there might be situations where you may not actually truly be like gluten free or like have celiac disease, but it might be like recommended by your doctor to perhaps experiment without eating it just to see, like Kate said, if it does cause any inflammation trigger. But it's been very funny hearing my mom try to like learn how to like make, baked goods with all these like random gluten free flours. And she's like, it is like such like the Wild West out there. And it's definitely better than probably what it was 20 years ago. But yeah, gluten-free stuff, it's definitely a hit or a miss. If you live in New York, Need Love Bakery is a really, really great local gluten-free bakery. You can also order stuff online. They're actually now available at all the farmers markets and I think like a Bonberry Mart, but she probably makes like some of the best gluten-free bread in the world. Granted, I haven't like tried that many gluten-free bread brands, but I do feel like it tastes fairly similar to like a traditional sourdough. Getting into the next section is organic versus non-organic. And I think this has a lot of ties to like micronutrients and whether like you should be buying like organic stuff because it has more micronutrients, et cetera. So the organic label, which I'm sure we're all very familiar with, is actually something that's regulated and it's food that has been produced in accordance to the USDA organic standards. So there is so much like marketing when it comes to like so many different terms that you see on different packages at the grocery store, such as like all natural. And it's nice knowing that like when you do buy organic, you know that this is regulated and that it's certified and that it's actually like truly an organic product versus like all natural. It's like that kind of means nothing. And these standards include operations and practices that cycle resources, conserve biodiversity, and preserve ecological balance. In different categories, so like meat and dairy are going to have different standards versus like grains or packaged products. And I think really the question that people constantly have is like, is organic truly better than, conventional or non-organic produce? And studies have shown like a small to moderate increase in some nutrients in organic produce. Organic produce may have more of like certain antioxidants and types of flavonoids, which are an antioxidant property. And non-organic is generally sprayed with glyphosate, which I think is like a big argument that people utilize when they kind of talk about why you should be buying organic versus like non-organic. And I think glyphosate has been talked about so much on TikTok, especially I'm thinking just in like the animal based diet type of spheres. And there are some journals that have done, or there are some studies that obviously have done like extensive research on like the difference between the two. And I'll touch on a few, but I think like ultimately, like you should definitely focus more of your energy on the list that they put out annually, which is like the Dirty Dozen and the Perfect 15. And these kind of outline like the 12 or the dozen foods that are like quote unquote like the dirtiest that are going to have like the most like pesticides, herbicides, and glyphosate. And those are the foods that you should always be buying organic if possible. And then the clean 15 are just like the foods that are like consistently like clean based off of like how they're probably grown in the soil or in the trees. And like those are the ones that you can kind of get away with buying perhaps more conventionally. And I'm gonna go into like tips about like, where you should be exerting your energy. But I think like that's a very useful list that you can probably download as a PDF and have that, part of your grocery list just so you can be like, mindful of like what foods maybe you should be paying more for than others. But kind of to get into a few of these different studies that talks about, organic versus non-organic, in 2014, the British Journal of Nutrition analyzed 343 peer-reviewed publications on the differences between organic and conventional food. And the study found that there were consistently higher levels of antioxidants, like I said, in organic crops compared to the conventionally grown crops. And the conventionally grown crops had higher concentrations of pesticide use in the toxic metal cadmium. Organic grown foods contain higher levels of phytochemicals and estimated that people who take in 20 to 60%, people who ate organic foods took in about 20 to 60% more phytochemicals if they ate organic versus conventional, meaning that you would almost have to eat twice as much of the conventional produce plus twice as many pesticides to get the same amount of phytochemicals. Kind of in terms of omega-3 fatty acids, the feeding requirements for organic farm animals, so like livestock, usually are going to have much higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids versus those that are conventional or not grass-fed or not organic. And this is really because the heart healthy fats that these livestock and cattle do obtain from eating, their traditional diet of alfalfa and grass versus a grain-fed diet. Conventional crops, granted, yes, they drive higher yields, but when they land on our plates, they usually deliver, lower levels of micronutrients that are to make our food healthy. So I think like as an individual, it's definitely up to you to determine if you want to, maximize your, intake of macronutrients. And if that's something that's like really, really important to you, then like by all means, like go ahead and buy all the organic and all the grass-fed stuff. I know a lot of us aren't in that position to do so. And so, for me, like I feel like I used to be like very like specific about like always buying organic. And that probably stems from my dad. He kind of went through like an organic phase where he was like, everything has to be organic. My mom was like, why do our tortilla chips need to be organic? And I'm sure like all parents kind of go through that, especially when they have like a newborn, when they like want to protect them from the world and like not give them anything that is like quote unquote toxic. And so yeah, if you're in a position, like definitely buy organic, like based off of the research, like there are, minor benefits of eating organic versus non-organic or conventional food. If you go to farmers markets, I do want to say that like a lot of farmer markets or a lot of farmers, they may not be able to actually afford to go through the certification process of being organic. So they might still be following the same protocols and practices that would consider themselves organic, but may not be able to like actually obtain that certification for like a few different reasons. So I definitely recommend, going to the farmers market, getting to know your farmers and ask them about their farming practices, and they'll be able to give you, so much more like knowledge and insight in terms of like how farming practices do actually impact their food. And also too, it's like we're not going to die. People have been eating like conventional food forever. Like our bodies are smart. So if you're eating more conventional than organic, it's not like you're going to like develop some random like disease, or you're going to have like Alzheimer's or something, down the line. But again, of course, too, like I feel like this is kind of like really the first time in human history where there's been so much, usage of herbicides, pesticides, glyphosate, that it's probably going to take a few years for us to really fully understand the scope of those the harms and like the effects of conventional food.
Yeah, I think about that a lot. Like, what are we going to think in 50 years is kind of like the cigarette that we used to do. And I feel like I've seen a lot of TikToks that say alcohol is going to be that. But I do wonder when it comes to the food system, like what's going to be kind of equal to like carcinogens or trans fats or like things that doctors on all sides of the aisle agree upon, or if we're ever going to get to that point. Because now I feel like we have so many health and wellness opinions that I feel like nothing is truly universally agreed upon. And then the last topic for today is going to be about adaptogens. Some of the girlies have asked, like, I see them on my social media. I kind of want to get into it. Like, why do people take adaptogens and where should I start? So this will be that question for you girlies. I think overall, why people are turning to adaptogens, like why we see this trend happening in wellness, is that everyone's looking for a way to relieve stress, whether it's taking an edible, whether it's doing yoga, whether it's taking a bath. And, 47% of Americans say that their stress levels have increased since the pandemic. And I think one new, not new, but like growing trend is involving in this like stress relief space is definitely taking adaptogens. And these are herbs or plants that are thought to neutralize the effects of stress on the body. And it can be any kind of stress. It could be physical, it could be emotional, it even could be hormonal. And it could even be like related to the different things that we eat and drink are going to impact your body's systems. And so experts believe that adaptogens are going to interact with your hypothalamic, pituitary, adrenal axis, your HPA axis, if you hear that on the wellness podcast. And that's going to be what initiates your body into this flight or fight stress response. And it plays a big role in keeping all of your internal systems in balance. And so the logic is that, if you are stressed out, everything else in your body can't interact and do its job properly. And in parts in Asia and India, people have been using adaptogens for centuries to treat different ailments. And it's now sort of made its way to Western cultures, and Western medicine is now thinking about it more seriously. Because there is more research, or I guess like more research has been developed in the past few years on adaptogens. And I think there's a lot to consider before you do add adaptogens to your routine. It might just seem like, oh, I'm taking this little herb, like it can't hurt me, whatever. But I would really have some caution before you do take it. Also, it's expensive to take adaptogens. I mean, not always, but I do think if you're going to buy supplements sometimes and you don't really know why you're taking them, like it's probably not strategic to do that. But, anyways, adaptogens can be taken. Typically, the form is going to be adding them to like foods or beverages and tinctures. You also can take powders. There's different teas. You also can take capsule forms. So I would say that kind of category, truly just take whatever you think is going to promote longevity of you taking the supplement every single day. Specifically with adaptogens, like you will not see results unless you are taking these consistently. And also another thing I didn't realize when I was doing research is that not all herbs are going to be working as adaptogens. There are three different categories or criteria that adaptogens have to meet to be considered one. And so these different herbs and plant substances must be non-toxic at normal doses. They must support the entire body's ability to cope with stress, and they must help your body return to a stable state. So that's kind of what holistic practitioners classify as an adaptogen. It has to meet those three criteria. And some of the common types that you've probably seen, ashwagandha, we make memes about all the time. This is something that's shown to help reduce anxiety and depression. It's one of the most well-researched supplements when it comes to Western medicine. Ginseng, either American or Asian ginseng, is used to combat fatigue. It's more of like an energy uplifting adaptogen. Reishi is a mushroom adaptogen that's thought to be like a healer for your immune system. Some people have said that it can help fight cancer, which I'm not going to say has been proven in clinical studies, but that's something that people say can kill cancer cells. TBD on that if we get clinical research on that. Rhodiola is tended to be more of a stress reducing one, in the sense that it helps with fatigue, depression, and pain. This would be more of something that you take at night, or something to help like battle kind of jitteriness, anxiousness. Schisandra is something that's like a little bit of a sex adaptogen. It's also for improving concentration and endurance. So it's kind of used in like a libido sense, but then at the same time, just keeping you focused into the day. Maca is another adaptogen that we know and love for libido. It has kind of this caramel taste. So it's used in a lot of like no bake recipes sometimes with wellness recipes. And then tulsi or holy basil is used to increase focus, help with anxiety. Lion's mane, I actually don't think is considered an adaptogen after doing my research, but it still is kind of the same category. It is an herb and it's used for focus. Some people call it nature's Adderall. I find a lot of benefits from taking lion's mane mushroom. And then, before you start taking adaptogens, I do think it's important to talk to your primary care doctor because these things can interact with different medications, specifically SSRIs. So you just want to make sure that your doctor knows what you're taking. And I realize as I say that, a lot of us don't have primary care, physicians anymore. But if you do, I definitely would bring this up in conversation with them. Or if you do have a psychiatrist that's prescribing you anything, or a therapist, maybe like those could be other resources to talk to about it. And adaptogens, I think another disclaimer is that they're not to be taken permanently. They should be taken for very specific reasons in like very acute ways. People that prescribe adaptogens or like a holistic practitioners often say you should rotate them. So you should even take breaks from adaptogens, like take some for a few weeks, take time off because your body is adapting to the stress. And so when you're taking the same dose over time, that dose is going to be less effective. And that's kind of the point that you're getting your body to be at this like neutral state. So you want to, continue to take adaptogens every few months or so. But you want to make sure you're taking them for 3 weeks consistently for them to start even working. Like you're not going to see, I think sometimes like let's say like a CBD, you could feel immediately relaxed or after an Epsom salt bath or magnesium. Like you could feel effects in hours. Adaptogens, you're not going to know for 3 weeks. And I think that's pretty hard for people to latch onto because it is really difficult to take the same supplement at the same time every day. Like for me, I'm pretty good on taking pills like every single day. But I think if I had to take adaptogens powders every single day, I probably would fall off the map because I feel like there's more variables of like, what am I drinking in the day? What's my routine? Like, where am I? Like, whatever. But a pill you could pack with you could take you. So just keep that as a caution. If you feel like you haven't seen results, like give yourself a little bit more time. And then when you get more into the adaptogen space, there are different combinations you can do because different adaptogens will have these effects on your mind and your body. And so you can combine adaptogens synergistically to get the best effects out of the different properties. So one example of this would be cordyceps is kind of known as like the athlete's mushroom. And this is regarded to boost stamina. It helps the body produce the molecule that ATP, which is delivering energy to your muscles. And so cordyceps is this like very stimulating adaptogen, kind of called the athlete's mushroom. And it's very energizing compared to things like ashwagandha or holy basil. And so if you partner cordyceps with Asian ginseng, it's believed that both these things together will help boost your endurance, help boost your mood. And I've definitely found benefits of stacking certain things in my routine, like I've stacked lion's mane and cordyceps in the past, and I feel very focused like before my runs with that and feel very energized. And I think the main symptoms to know if adaptogens are working, once again, take it for that long period of time, take them consistently, but notice if your digestion is off because that's kind of the first signal of your body telling you that something is irregular. Secondly, if you have different mental symptoms or if you have different physical symptoms, I think those things will tell like something is not working, or if it is working, you can kind of keep note of that. And it is kind of arbitrary, or I guess not arbitrary, but arduous is the word I was looking for, to like take a journal or keep stock of what you're feeling throughout the week. But if you are, let's say, spending like, a certain amount of dollars on adaptogens, you're taking them for 3 weeks, like maybe just make this a fun little time for you to go down to journaling, like my little ashwagandha journal, because that's the only way with consistency to really know what these supplements are doing to you. So I hope that's helpful for anyone out there who is curious about adaptogens, but that's kind of what I would say, best practices for adaptogens.
Yeah, there's so many brands out there too. I think a few that Kate and I really, really love and that we both know are very credible. There's Moon Juice, obviously. Wooden Spoon Herbs is great. Gosh, I'm like blanking on all of them now, but there's so many out there. So definitely do your research. Cat Beauty, I feel like, does a really
Sun
good job
Potion is
at
really good.
selling. Yeah.
I was trying to think of more. Yeah, we'll think of more. I mean, I also feel like you could go to a more natural store. Like there's a place called Duels Natural in New York City where you can get adaptogens for pretty cheap. Also like that website I've never ordered on there, so let me know if this is bad and I'm promoting something stupid, but it's like herb.com, iherb.com. I feel like they always have adaptogens. Thrive Market could have them as well, but I feel like you girlies know where to find the powders and the potions and the dusts by now. But that's this week's pod. We hope you guys enjoyed. As always, if you have a topic that you want in the pod, feel free to shoot us a cheeky DM, either on our personals or on CMOS Girlies. You can pop into Geneva if you're not there. It's a community platform where people talk about health and wellness all the time. So if you just follow for the memes in the pod, but you want more community, definitely check that out. But it's a Monday night in New York City. I think Emma and I are both going to go off, eat our little dinners, get in the Epsom salt bath, do that thing.
Yeah, you're correct there. Definitely going to eat some dinner and then my post-dinner snack and go to bed.
We love that. But hope you girlies enjoyed the pod. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next Tuesday.